This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And before we begin, I'd like to remind you that the views of the guests and hosts of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And on this week's episode, we'll be hearing from Laura Hermanson, who travelled to the US Dressage Finals both in 2014 and 2016 with two different mules. She'll be telling her story about how trainable the mules are and about a documentary that's being made about their story. And after we hear from Laura about shipping horses across the country, Dr. Lewis will be giving us tips on keeping horses healthy while hauling long distances. That will be coming up later in our vet segment. But first, as the USDF convention gets underway in St. Louis, Missouri this week, a reminder that if you're not able to attend, you will be able to follow us on social media. On the Facebook page, there'll be regular updates of the events that are taking place and the meetings that will be held throughout the week. And as usual, one of the highlights will be the USDF Salute Gala. And among the recipients will be the winners of its annual service awards. The USDF Volunteer of the Year will be awarded to Kentuckian Sheila Worth. Sheila will be presented with a perpetual trophy established by Lisa Goretta, which is on permanent display at the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. Sophie Chavanel was awarded the 2016 USDF Youth Volunteer of the Year Award. Sophia will be presented with a perpetual trophy donated by the Akin family of Warwick, New York, in honour of Lendon Gray. This trophy is also on permanent display in the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. New in 2016 is the USDF Member of Distinction Award, a prestigious national award that annually recognizes one USDF member who has demonstrated exceptional commitment in his or her local area or region. Jan Rumbaugh from Wellington, Florida, will be the inaugural recipient. The 2016 USDF Lifetime Achievement Award will go to Dr. Sam Barish, who holds the record for the longest tenure as a member of the executive board through his roles as Region 1 Director from 1988 to 1995. He was also the USDF Vice President from 1997 to 1999 and the USDF President from 2000 to 2009. Lillian Whitmack Roy and Rocha will be inducted into the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. Induction into the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame is an honor bestowed on individuals and horses that have made outstanding contributions to dressage in the United States. Rocha competed extensively across Europe in Oldenburg, Munich, Gothenburg, Hagen, and Wiesbaden with George Williams on board. Showing off her floppy ears and flashy extended trot, Rocha is a dressage icon in the United States for those that witnessed her in competition before her retirement in 2009. Lillian Whitmack Roy was instrumental in the development of dressage in the United States after coming to this country from Denmark at the close of World War II. Lillian organized the first American Horse Shows Association's recognized dressage show, which was held in the U.S. in 1955. Hosting riders from Canada to Michigan. She hand-wrote all of the tests, which she translated from Danish, and judged the show herself. In the February of 1958, Lillian founded the International Equestrian Organization, the USDF's oldest established and charter group member organization. To find out more about the USDF Awards, please visit the website at usdf.org. And now our first guest this week proves that the sport of dressage can seem elusive and elite, but many breeds excel at the sport, and this is evidenced by the wide variety of breeds and types that come to compete at the US Dressage Finals each November. One example is Hart Bediner, who is not a horse, but a mule, who made a splash at the 2014 US Dressage Finals when she became the first mule to qualify for and compete in the event. Laura Hermanson joins us now to talk about her journey to compete with two different mules at the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan. Laura, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, it's quite a story, not just having one mule, but two. So we want to hear how this all came about. Why mules?
Well, it all began with Susan and John McGee of Washington, D.C. When mules were allowed into the USDF, they approached me and said, would you go find some mules? We would love to go do this. So it began with their two mules, B.B. McGee and Moxie, and began training them to do dressage and compete. And it turned out they were successful at it. B.B. McGee ended up third in the nation last year with a median of 76 for her first level freestyle. And so that made me think that, hey, you know, mules can really do this.
Well, clearly they've proved themselves, and you're doing it all over again with your two. Tell us how you found the two that you're riding in dressage at the moment.
Heartbeat Dinah is my personal mule. I own her. And after I had ridden some mules for other people, I decided that it would be fun to get a young one and sort of see how the training would go and start to compete in dressage. So I began with her and ended up being more successful than I imagined. And after the success I've had with the other mules and Dinah, the owners, Carol and Troy Delfino, brought me Behold the Desert this year to hopefully continue the adventures.
Well, I'm sure people are wondering how they are to train compared to a horse and what the sort of characteristics that you're dealing with, the temperament and the adaptability to training at whatever level. I mean, I know you were training level, weren't you, at the finals, but talk a little bit about the training process with these and how adaptable they are, Laura.
Well, the mules are tricky. They are tricky because you cannot force a mule to do anything. You know, sometimes with horses, people can make something happen. And with a mule, you cannot. You have to come with an approach that is a little friendlier, a little more of a clear understanding. You have to be really clear in what it is you're asking and kind of wait for them. They require a lot of patience. And sort of wait for them to find the right answer. But most importantly is you have to have a good sense of humor because they are half donkey. So occasionally their moods or their temperaments might decide to, you know, exit stage left, and you just have to laugh about it and not get frustrated and begin again. That's the only way I have found to be able to be successful.
So lots of patience. And would the key also be to get them and start them fairly young, to develop that relationship in a disciplined environment and, you know, persuade them that this is going to be a career for them?
Absolutely. And I also think because confirmationally they are not, in general, there is a very small percentage that are confirmationally built to do dressage. So because of that, as the same as any, quote, off-breed in dressage, you have to work to physically develop them. So I think that starting them at a young age and physically developing them to be able to use their hind ends and use their backs and really be through and create the right connection is vital because it doesn't come as easy for them. So you have to try to physically develop them in a way that'll make it easier and have the patience to work with the time it takes to get them there.
What would be their strengths and weaknesses then in competition when you're training them to the point of competition and actually in that environment, Laura?
Well, mules, like I've said, can be a little bit tricky, mental-minded. They can be tricky-minded. So I think to be able to show a mule in competition, just like any horse, you have to get them the life experience, you know, taking them to schooling shows and getting them exposed to as many arenas as possible and as many venues as possible, I think helps build the confidence for them. Because at the finals in particular, it is such a beautiful showgrounds at Kentucky Horse Park. But there is a lot to take in. I mean, it's a huge production between the billboards and the foliage and the decorations, it's a lot to take in. So I think that for the two meals I've taken in particular, the background work that I did of getting them to as many places as possible and exposing them is what made it possible for them to hold it together during the competition, as well as just making sure that with mules more than the horses, I don't take them to a competition unless I know they are very prepared, because they are going to be judged more than just your average horse going into competition. So I really take care to make sure they are, you know, immaculately turned out, that they are mentally in a good place, that they are prepared to go compete.
How long have you been training these two then, particularly Laura? When did you first get these? At what age?
Dinah, I purchased as a three-year-old with 60 days on her. And Behold the Desert, I've just had for the last year. He was previously with a fabulous trainer doing eventing and some jumping. And so I've really only been working with him for about a year.
And in terms of where they could go, their potential for competition, what do you see now that you didn't see maybe when you started training them?
They surprised me, and I think part of it is that hybrid vigor, because so many of these mules should not be able to do what they can do. Conformationally, look at them standing there. They should not be able to move the way they do, yet they can. So I think the biggest lesson I've learned, and it's carried over to the horses I ride as well, that staying open-minded, not being closed-minded as to how far they might be able to go or what they might be able to do, because they have challenged all preconceived notions I had about what a mule could do. I never dreamed that mules could score in the high 70s, and yet they have. So I think as far as developing them for future competition, I'm just trying to stay open-minded and just keep working like we all do in this sport for, you know, individual personal goals and accomplishments, and just see how far they can go. It's a bit of an unknown right now.
Well, you mentioned that the confirmation. Right. I would imagine so, to a certain extent. The other question I had was about the comfort level. When you're riding a mule, it's a very different ride to a horse, isn't it? Have you adapted well to that, or do you still find sitting to them to be a challenge?
Well, you know, the mules that I'm currently riding, the way they've been trained, the way they've been developed, they feel no different than a horse. They don't feel any differently. As long as, you know, once they've learned to balance and use their hind ends and be through, they feel the same as any horse you ride. But they also have fairly good quality gaits to them. So oftentimes they feel better to ride than many of the horses I get. So as far as adapting to the way they feel, when they're trained correctly, they feel the same as a horse to ride.
And how do they handle the road trips? That's a lot of miles for them. I'm obviously coming from California to Kentucky. How do they adapt to that? Do they travel well?
They are fabulous travelers. Mules like adventure. They're curious animals by nature. And I've had great experience with them traveling. You know, I've never had problems with them loading. They like to hop on and go. And I have to say, both times, that was probably one of the things I was most concerned with. How would they be able to compete physically, mentally, after traveling that many hours? And both Dinah and Beasley, which is what we call Behold the Desert, both Beasley and Dinah hopped off the trailers. We went with Brookledge trailers, and they just walked right off feeling like $1 million. I mean, their legs were beautiful, their backs felt great. They just really traveled well.
When you talk about the donkey in them, do they bite and kick as you would expect them to at times? Are they unpredictable in their reaction to you around the barn, or at times of stress if they really don't want to do something?
Not at all. I think that's one of the biggest preconceived misinformation out there, is that just like any horse, it's about the way they've been handled. So a mule, if it's been handled correctly in taught manners and taught to have, you know, boundaries, are the same as any horse. They don't kick, they don't bite, they don't have, you know, aggressive tendencies at all. So I have not run across any of that of mules that I know where the handling has been done. Just like any horse, you know, mistreated or mishandled, they can be awful. I would say as far as the donkey side of things, they get that sense of strong self-preservation from the donkey. And that is where the difference, I think, in the training comes from, in that you cannot make it happen with a mule. You have to really think about it, present it to them in the right way, and like I said, wait for them to sort of figure it out. And the sort of classical dressage training seems to be the most effective for them because you can't force it. So when you try to force it, the mules will simply refuse. They will either just bolt and be gone, leave the scene, or they just quit, which comes from that strong sense of self-preservation they get from the donkey.
You mentioned there to bolt, because you can just imagine a mule bolting. Well, certainly I can, and heading off in a straight line, and there'd be no turning left or right. How strong can they get? Have you been in a situation where you simply, the steering has gone completely and the brakes don't work?
Many, many times. That is where the good sense of humor needs to come in, because when you're training a young mule, oftentimes when they don't understand, you know, often their reaction is just go. They're very intelligent about it. They don't run blindly, and they don't run far in general, because that sense of self-preservation from the donkey kicks in, and they don't necessarily want to spend that much energy. So I have found the most effective way that when you come across a mule that wants to bolt or leave is to actually do no reaction at all, is to just sit and wait. And eventually, when they're not given a resistance, if you're not pulling on them or not trying to turn them, they kind of go, oh, there's no reaction, and generally just stop. They'll quit. That, and you have to laugh a lot about it.
Exactly. Good sense of humor, essential, and a level of patience as well. And finally, tell us about the documentary that's being made about your story with these mules, Laura.
Well, the documentary is going to be coming out in 2017. Most of the information can be found on the Facebook page. And, you know, a filmmaker that I know, Sarah Crow, approached me about my story about, you know, a mule, the underdog story of a mule competing in dressage. And so I allowed her to sort of follow my journey with it. And she filmed a bunch at the final. And it's been a great experience. And I really hope that it encourages people to really try dressage. I'm so passionate about this sport and the benefits it has for humans as riders, for the animals, for their physical care, their mental care, as well as for every breed, being able to use dressage for other disciplines. But mainly, my hope is that this documentary encourages people to be brave, to just go out and try something that might be a little intimidating or might not fit the norm, and just go for it.
And tell us again the name of the documentary and when it will be released, Laura.
It is Dinah Does Dressage, and it will be released in 2017.
Well, the very best of luck with that, and congratulations again on what you've achieved with your mules at the US Dressage Finals and beyond, of course, and the very best of luck for the future with them.
Thank you.
And finally, in our vet segment, Senior Education Coordinator Sharon van der Seel talks to Dr. Susanna Lewis about what horse owners need to know to travel horses long distance.
Hello, Dr. Lewis. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
With many horses traveling longer distances more frequently, it is important for owners to know how to prepare for these trips. Dr. Lewis has agreed to answer some frequently asked questions about travel health. So let's start with what we should be doing before hitting the road.
So I think it's important to make plans before you take any big trip. First off, knowing how far you're going, knowing if the climate's a lot different from what your horse is used to. Sort of make a plan for where your farrier work is going to hit in with your show ahead of time. Sometimes you have to plan that a couple weeks ahead. And then especially with the new USEF requirements for vaccinations, you don't want to vaccinate within like a week or two of leaving. So you might need to prepare ahead of time for when you want to vaccinate your horse. And then also making sure your horse loads well, stables well, if you need to do smaller trips closer to your home before you take a big trip. There's a lot of considerations that are going to be pretty individual to your horse to decide if it's ready to make a big trip or not.
How do I decide if my horse is healthy enough for the trip?
So first off, you need to know how far you're going. I would say 99% of horses are perfectly happy and healthy to go on a trip in their neighborhood, maybe an hour or two away. As we get farther and farther away, your horse's age, any chronic health conditions like maybe heaves or some foot conditions, or an older horse with arthritis that needs a lot of turnout, those considerations might need to come into play. And talking to your trainer and, of course, your veterinarian to ask about how best to prepare your horse for a trip and whether that trip is right for your horse is going to be important ahead of time.
So what are some of the other things that we might need to do to prepare?
So first off, you want to make sure your paperwork is in order. So you need a Coggins health cert if you're going out of state, or anywhere like Kentucky Horse Park requires it for local horses as well. And your vaccinations, like we talked about before. And I think it's really important to know what is normal for your horse and to be comfortable taking a temperature, a pulse, and a respiration. So if you aren't comfortable doing that, now's a great time to ask horse friends or your veterinarian how to do that. So a horse's normal temperature should be between 99 and 101.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Their pulse should be between about 28 and 44 beats per minute. And the respiration should be between 8 and 24 breaths per minute. That's a good way to gauge your horse's just basic health, especially if you have to make a phone call to your vet from out of state and you're trying to figure out if you need to call the show vet and you're kind of in a tight spot. That gives the vet a lot of information to help you decide how urgent a problem is. In addition, we all love to talk about horse poop as veterinarians. So horses should be defecating 6 to 9 times a day when they're healthy and their gut's moving well and they're well hydrated. Obviously, some horses will be different. So if your horse always poops in the same corner at the same time of day, that's good to know too, because you can know if that changes as well. And then as far as drinking, a 1,000-pound horse that is doing nothing but standing in a stall on a 50-degree day will drink 1 to 2 of those big 5-gallon buckets of water a day, but that can increase dramatically with exercise and heat, so plan on that being more in most show situations.
And how should I prepare the trailer?
Well, first off, there's no one right way to trailer a horse. There's no one trailer that's right for everyone. So I think it kind of depends a bit on what your setup is and how far you're going. But there's a couple of things that are great in all trailers. Ventilation is really good. I've often been surprised with how hot horses come out of trailers, even when you think you have a huge breeze through everything. And that's really good for their respiration as well. You want to keep the dust down as much as possible while still having something absorbent on the bottom, in longer hauls at least, to absorb any poop and pee they might have. I always like to ship with leather or other breakaway halters in case there is a trailer accident. And then anytime you're going more than a couple hours, if you can rig up a way to hang a water bucket so they have a chance to drink as they feel the need, that's great. Otherwise, if you can't find a safe way to do that, you can stop and offer them water.
So what are the biggest health concerns for traveling horses?
So the biggest concerns for traveling horses, well, most of them owners are aware of, and maybe we can give you some new tips to try to manage them. The one everyone worries about the most is all the bumps and lumps and cuts that might come, especially in the trailer. How much padding can you put on your horse? So there's a couple different ways you can approach this. The most common things are cuts and scrapes, especially on the legs and head, because those are the most mobile parts of the horse. And then corneal abrasions and lacerations as well from flying debris in the trailer. So a lot of people will ship in fly masks. That's great if you can get more ventilation, but you have more flying debris around. Fly masks can help little things from getting in the eye. Head bumpers are popular. It kind of depends on the size of your horse and the size of your trailer. If you're putting a pony in a trailer, he probably is not going to fling his head up and hit the head. Some of our big dressage horses, if you have a trailer that's not super tall, that might be a concern, especially if they're head shy or prone to startling with their head up in the air. And then the big debate for everyone is, what do you want to put on the legs? Everyone has their own opinion, and again, there's no one right way. It kind of depends on your situation and who's hauling the horse. A lot of commercial shippers will actually require no wraps at all on the leg. That keeps them cooler, and there's no risk of anything becoming tangled or slipping or otherwise causing problems en route. And most horses tolerate that quite well. I would say, in my opinion, it's usually good to throw on some bell boots in that situation as well, just in case. And obviously, commercial shippers ship a lot of horses a lot of distance, and that's what they feel is the safest, so that is some evidence there too. Sort of the middle of the road option is shipping boots. I personally like the ones that cover down where a bell boot would cover and then come up just a little bit over the knees and hocks, because those are areas prone to cuts. These provide lots of padding. They're easy on and off. If your horse does start to take them off, they usually finish the job, or they don't get tangled or twisted the way a standing wrap might. But they're going to have a little bit less support and they can be hot. So if you're in a very hot climate, that might not be the best choice. And then standing wraps with bell boots provides more support, and it's something you already have in the tack box. You don't have to buy anything new. There is a risk of tangling if they come partially undone. They're hotter and trap moisture. Sometimes we see some skin conditions when horses ship or long distance in these in hot weather from moisture and sweat getting trapped. And there's a risk of bandage bows as well, which can be a concern when you're going to a competition and you need your horse fit and healthy from the moment he walks off the trailer.
So other than injuries, what are some of the health concerns that horses might face while trailering?
So probably the biggest one veterinarians worry about is respiratory disease. There's sort of two categories of this. First, what we call shipping fever, which is a bacterial pneumonia infection of the lungs. Horses are at more risk for this when they're trailered because they're in sort of a contained environment with less than ideal ventilation. And if they can't put their head down, it's a little bit harder for their natural defense mechanisms to work. So they're more at risk of developing infections. And additionally, any sort of stress reduces their immune response as well. So there's sort of a higher risk situation for a pneumonia type shipping fever to develop. So the big things you would watch for this are fever, off-feed, lethargic. Anytime a horse at a show has a fever, it's a good idea to keep them in their stall and call a veterinarian, because we're kind of responsible as a community for keeping everyone else safe. And it might be something that's not contagious, but you need to have it evaluated by a vet if it has a fever before you can make that call.
So what diseases would I need to worry about catching maybe from other horses at competitions?
So again, it's respiratory viruses mostly. So the big ones we worry about are equine influenza and equine herpes virus, the respiratory form. These can both be spread by nasal secretions and nose-to-nose contact, so you want to minimize those as much as you can. And then the best thing we can do to protect our horses is vaccinate traveling horses for both of those diseases. I recommend in almost all situations. If you have a horse that really reacts strongly, especially some of them react to the influenza vaccine, IM, if you can give the intranasal form, a lot of them tolerate that better. So there are some options if you have a horse that's a bad reactor to still get them that protection that we really can't get any other way. And again, sort of as being responsible to our community, if you're coming from a farm that is dealing with one of these issues, get your vet's clearance before you hit the road. Even if your horse is healthy, it might be in everyone's best interest if you stay home while there's a virus outbreak at a particular farm. And then just monitoring your horse, taking their temperature once or twice a day while traveling at a show can help you catch things.
So we know that managing stress is really important. Are there any other tips that you can give us?
Yeah, so there's a couple ways we can reduce stress when you're traveling. One, as we talked about before, horses are creatures of routine. So keeping the routine as similar as possible, feeding at the same times. Some horses really like to travel in the same stall in the trailer or have the same tack-up routine when they get to the show as they did at home. So keeping the routine similar as possible so that it's familiar to them even in an unfamiliar spot, or they learn a routine for showing as they go. Introducing a horse gradually and repeatedly to traveling and showing. Horses get much more stressed out if once every couple years they go to a show than if they go to a couple shows every summer. So even if it's just a schooling show in your neighborhood, something like that can help them acclimate to the process. Avoid changes to hay and grain. Sometimes that's impossible when you're on a commercial ship or you can't bring bales and bales of hay. But when possible, that really helps their gut maintain their normal process. Consider ulcer guard or gastroguard to reduce the risk of stomach ulcers when you travel. That's something we see very, very commonly in showing horses and racing horses of all disciplines. And then hand walks and hand grazing, anything you can do to kind of maintain their normal routine at home. And especially older horses benefit from light walking and grazing because they get a little more stiff overnight, especially if they're used to a lot of turnout.
So I know maintaining hydration is important. So do you have any tips on how we can help do that for horses that are away from home?
Yeah, a lot of people spend a lot of time worrying about this. Number one, I think the best thing is to just give your horse time to relax and settle in and get used to the new water before you get too worried about it. In most cases, healthy horses will rehydrate completely by just drinking water on their own. Sometimes giving an electrolyte placed or adding electrolytes to their daily grain can help keep them drinking. Some people with really picky horses will either bring water from home or get them used to drinking a certain flavor of water like apple juice or Gatorade, so that wherever they go, they can make the water taste similar. Anytime you add something to water, it always is a good idea to add a plain bucket of water next to it. If they don't like your additives, they still have a water option. Sometimes feeding a mash or soaked hay will increase their water intake without them really noticing. And if they're truly clinically dehydrated, like an elevated heart rate, decreased capillary refill, it's time to call a vet. If they aren't drinking well.
Okay, I think that was a lot of great information. Are there maybe three main tips you could give us about hauling?
I would say my three big things are, one, prepare ahead of time. That includes, like, make sure you have your vaccinations ahead of time, make sure your trailer is in good condition, and know your horse is normal. Monitor your horse at the show, so keep an eye on them, keep an eye on their health, not just their performance in the ring, and then do what you can to reduce horse and human stress.
All right, great. Well, thanks again for joining us, Dr. Lewis. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And finally, another reminder that it's time to renew your USDF membership, because only members who are renewed by December 31st will receive the 2016 yearbook issue of USDF Connection magazine. All members who renew for 2017 will enjoy savings with the USDF Member Perks Partners. And for more information, please visit the website at usdf.org. Whilst you're there, remember to check out the education calendar to find a variety of dressage-oriented educational programs in your area. And of course, there's always educational resources and information at eTrack. And that's it for this week's program. Don't forget you can download this episode from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app, including Stitcher. Follow us on social media for updates of when the next episode will be available. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.